Welcome to the inaugural episode of Ask an Expert. This is a fun-sized podcast where two advertising creatives who know a lot about useless things like parallel parking and stalwart Pennsylvania gas station chain Wawa, but actually know very little about things that might actually matter. So this podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Working Not Working, an invite-only community connecting the world's best creative talent with companies looking to hire them. This episode is about accounting, and we're talking to freelancers today about what we're calling getting rich or die crying. So let's meet our co-host. That's us, Marcus.
That's me.
So I am Cooper Smith. I'm the guy who's a parallel parking expert.
Oh, nice. Like the first try, first backup, no.
I take an inordinate amount of pride in my parallel parking.
It's a skill. And I am Marcus Gartrell, and I am an expert in Wawa, just a magnificent place. If you've never been, just go to the East Coast, Northeast region.
Yeah.
And with us today to help the conversation, our experts are from FreshBooks, Rob Ng and Jacqueline Tanner. Hey, guys.
Hey there.
Hey.
Right out of the gate, why don't you guys just tell us a little bit about what FreshBooks does, what it is?
Sure. Well, for those of you who don't know, FreshBooks is like a ridiculously easy-to-use accounting software designed exclusively for freelancers and small business owners who don't know anything about accounting. So we're just dead simple invoicing, expenses, time tracking, and reports that help you run your business a lot faster, especially when you don't know anything about accounting.
When you say business, is this good for businesses or is it helpful for freelancers as well?
It actually is for both, but we really focus mostly on freelancers and small business owners. So, you know, people who are on their own or maybe have a side hustle. So if they're, you know, moonlighting on the side, it's a perfect fit for them. But we really look for the smaller based businesses out there.
Well, you know, Marcus is doing some dancing on the side.
Always side hustling. Constantly side hustling. This sounds perfect for me.
Great. So as we said, the theme of this episode is about accounting. And as a former freelancer myself, and this is actually obviously fairly self-evident, one of the greatest things about freelancing is the money is dope and then some.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit of an interesting one from my experience. Like, creatives tend to be a little bit squeamish when it comes to money, and just not just squeamish, but not good at it.
Well, you know, just to kind of kick it off, what we find is when we work with a lot of creatives, they were never really trained in how to talk about money. You know, when you're in school, you go through a lot of design and courses, they don't tell you about how to talk the money talk. And that's something where it's more of a muscle that you need to kind of flex and get more used to. It's not like you're not able to do it. You just have to do it more often and get more used to it.
Full disclosure, I'm a copywriter here at FreshBooks, but I actually...
Very interesting.
And funnily enough, what I went to school for was theater. And I remember being taught, how do we account for money? How do we make sure that we're on the right side of the law? But we never even talked about that first step of, how do I talk to my client about the reciprocation of payment for my work? That never even came up. And I think it's just a topic that we've completely avoided as a whole group of people, as creatives. I think we've just avoided it because it's sticky and awkward, and you don't want to sound like you've sold out. You don't want to make it sound like your passion and your heart isn't in it, because your passion and your heart is in it. And at the same time,
you want to buy a boat. Sorry, go ahead.
I love it. No.
Yeah, it's just really hard too. And, you know, you're trying to put a sticker value, you know, on your work. And a lot of the time, you know, you don't know what that is. And you think, well, it's just me. And a lot of creatives are very modest, you know, and they don't realize the value they're giving their client and what sort of revenue that they can get from the work that they're giving. And so they really undervalue themselves and kind of are squeamish and don't think about it. But, you know, freelance isn't free.
How do you guys think that freelancers get over that hump?
Oh,
that's a big question. Is that a great question?
That's a great question. No answer.
Yeah.
I think it starts with your own colleagues. And it's, again, kind of sticky and weird, like asking someone what their salary is. It starts with just approaching the topic in general, saying, hey, does anyone else have this similar issue that, like, I don't want to bring this up. I don't know what's an uncool thing to bring up with my clients. I think just talking about it in the first place, just bringing it up out of this mystery shroud, is the first step personally.
Another one too is, you know, look at your costs and look at how much it costs for you to live. You know, one thing we think about is your best case and worst case, right? So your best case is, okay, what kind of salary are you looking for? And that's what you want to strive for. But then in the worst case, okay, what are my bills right now? And it's kind of that nitty gritty stuff that nobody wants to think about, but like your rent, your mortgage, if you have that, life expenses, a cushion, and see how much you need to survive and then work out from there, you know, how much you should charge.
Right. And I think in my experience anyway as a freelancer, it's very much a touch thing. It's something you feel out that, you know, if you start out and your day rate or your project rate is this level, just say, let's just say, because it's a nice round number, $1,000 a day. And people are not responding so great to that, or they are saying yes as quickly as possible. It kind of tells you that you can up or lower from project to project, and you just kind of get it fine-tuned.
As creatives, we will habitually undervalue ourselves.
Totally.
Oh, totally.
And time again. And I think it's just nuts when myself personally working freelance sometimes, if I think of my annual costs and what do I need just to stay above water and maybe even make a little bit more, and then I put forward some quote that feels nuts to me, but what the hey, let's try it, and then people are A-okay with it, and it feels risky, absolutely, but it's important to remember that as creatives, we are by default going to undervalue ourselves,
right,
at least up front, so you just kind of have to just push through that first one, maybe quick rip it off like a Band-Aid and say, this is how much I'm going to charge for this. See if they throw it back in your face. Odds are they won't.
Are there any kind of tips or practices when it comes to how to ask for that money without sounding like a money-obsessed, you know, dick, or not coming off as, well, you know, it'd be nice if you kind of gave me a little bit, you know?
Yeah,
how do you kind of strike the balance between those two?
For me, it's about offering options. And that way, no one's the bad guy. I can say, here, you'll get this for this much money, or you can get this for this much money, or you can even get this for this much money. That way, you're not coming out saying, it's got to be this, or I'm gone.
Right.
They can pick what they want. Odds are they'll pick the higher end. Who saw it coming? I know. But at least you're giving them the options, or at least the illusion of options.
Right.
Just laughing over here because I'm thinking about those options just being like, this is the half-assed job. This is the tooth.
Like, yeah.
If you pay me this much, I'll actually care and try.
Do you want me to open my eyes when I do this, or do you want me to just kind of click a couple buttons and figure out, you know, whatever comes out you get?
Just spend the rest of the day in the bathroom.
It's really true. It's the basic psychology, you know, in marketing terms, it's more like anchoring, right? So you give them something to work from, and then they're going to compare them. And so if you have that middle one that you really want to go for, then maybe think about a lower option and a higher option. If they take the higher option, Yahtzee, but they typically won't take that lower option because it's going to be half as good as the middle option and probably more on a per hour basis. So it's not going to look as attractive, even though the total dollar value might be a little bit less.
Right.
Yeah. I've also had some of the most annoying shit ever happen where like an agency has tried to, what my dad would call poor mouth me, which is like, well, we don't know if we can really afford that. And I'm like, you guys just won these five,
you're right,
like multi-million dollar accounts, and you guys are trying to lowball me for like, you know, $50 a day.
Yeah,
exactly. Right. So they're doing the reverse, right? So they're trying to harp on the fact that you're a freelancer and probably undervaluing yourself. But you have costs, you have living expenses that you have to deal with too. So, yeah, definitely.
Is there anything you can do to get your invoices through, or just make sure you're getting your money faster?
Sure, lots of things. One way, obviously, at the beginning is to think about deposits. So, you know, when you're working with a client at the upfront or an agency, go, okay, I require this much upfront. Maybe it's 20%, maybe it's 50%.
That's interesting.
So it gives you a little bit of that cash flow you need to keep going and keep the lights on, right, while you're working on the project. And if you do it at the beginning when they want your services, you have that negotiating power because it isn't like you've already delivered on the project and now they're walking away and forgetting about you. So that's one big thing.
I was gonna say, it's almost like a startup cost in a way.
Yeah, exactly. You require this amount at the get-go,
right,
so that you've got that cushion in your head to kind of keep things going. So that's one. Another one too we find is, you know, as a creative, you know, you get into this creative chaos and working on this these projects, and you kind of forget about the invoicing side until it's, you know, maybe near the end of your contract. But you probably should have sent that much, much earlier. So being more organized with when you send your invoices, that's a much better way to kind of get yourself sending it earlier versus later.
And I find bigger clients, you know, like bigger, say, corporations, they're habitual for paying just crazy, crazy late. So if you score an awesome contract with a big client, yay, but know that they're going to take their dear sweet time. So maybe something like deposits, incremental billing, that being, say, you send an invoice a quarter of the way, and then another invoice half, and then three quarters, and then all together at the end, so that, yeah, if that last invoice takes almost 3 months to get paid, at least you're not, you know, scraping the bottom of your coin jar just to eat.
Yeah, and really think ahead. For bigger corporations, typically it's a 30-day window after they receive it. So don't send it at the very end when you need it in the next 2 weeks. You got to give yourself some time for those bigger companies. So some creatives will send it right away. So, you know, they'll have that invoice sent out. And then on the back end, if you use, you know, an invoicing system that can automate it for you, then it can actually do it on your behalf and act as your third-party billing arm and do all of those sorts of things for you.
Wow. Nice. So
you know what I like to do is I like to take pictures of my nieces and then I mail them to the agency or the company I'm working with and just tell them that these are my kids and that they need to eat, and it's just a picture of them crying.
Shame. Shame.
Shaming is another way.
It's effective, okay?
And those nieces get none of the money.
Gotta make these ends.
You guys touched on an interesting point there, kind of, you know, with how it may take that 30 days, it may take a certain period. Is there kind of a best practices for how to prepare yourself when you even enter these? You know, is there a certain amount of money you should have saved just in case it does take some time, or if you hit a rough patch or whatever?
My general rule for myself is just try to have in the area of 3 months' salary just at the ready in case shit gets real. It's going to happen somewhere. So, I mean, I try to. That's a lot to ask for myself sometimes, depending on the, you know, the hills and valleys of freelance.
Right.
But I mean, that's something I try to aspire to. And actually quite recently, I had to use that little cushion. So it was nice to have, actually. And it was something that took me a while to, build up the discipline, to be honest, of just putting away X amount of dollars with each paycheck. It sucks, but hey, there will come a day when there is a lapse in cash flow. So, I mean, that's my own personal approach for it. Rob, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would say from what I think 3 months, you know, it's amazing to get to that level, I think, you know, as a freelancer. So to strive to that amount, I think, is a good number.
It's tough. No one's saying it's like super easy and, you know, like get your, you know, tuck your shirt in and get 3 months of salary. But, you know, it's something to just keep working towards. It happens to all of us, right? Everybody's got a dry season.
Well,
so
the
just
thing for me is I'm rich, so it doesn't matter.
Very rich. Very rich. You should see how well dressed he is right now.
My clothes right now.
Is that?
It's velvet.
Is that baldy? Oh, it's
velvet made of bald eagle. This next question comes from a working, not working member, and it's something I'm totally interested in as well. Having not freelanced, you know, thinking about starting and thinking about invoices, it's just kind of a scary word that seems way above my knowledge. So I don't really know what is a proper invoice, what kind of things would be on there. You know, I imagine there's something involving time. Maybe my middle name is on there. I don't know. So is it just kind of, you know,
shoe size?
Can you take us through the kinds of things that would be on an invoice to make it like a proper invoice?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's one thing Judge Judy has taught me.
Oh, I can't wait to hear
this. It is hairstyles.
Sass? The abstract concept of sass?
The second, and I'd say probably most important to my everyday life, is get it in writing. What's the stuff that, you know, worst case scenario, let's pretend this is a total flake of a client that you're for some reason going to take to court because that's not expensive. Anywho, so pretending we get all the way to court, what's the stuff that's going to help your case? So stuff like a date, stuff like who's the recipient of this invoice? What's the total amount? When was the payment date? You know, when did you expect to be paid? All this stuff that helps you, let's call it build a case, although that feels kind of strong. You know, what's the stuff that you need to get in writing so that you can talk to your client and say, hey, man, nothing personal, but this is what we both agreed to up front. So now we're just going to be consistent with our commitments.
an invoice is invariably almost like a contract, a very basic, you know, one-page version, if you will, of that contract. So that very scary scope creep might happen where, hey, you know, you want to add this, or can you also make this change? If it's not what's on the invoice or what was agreed upon, you have something in writing, and that is much, much better than a phone call conversation for you to go back at them. You know, it's unfortunate because in the creative space, you know, it's very different than, let's say, in the food space. If you get a burger and all of a sudden you want bacon, people know they have to pay for that. But for some reason with designers and creatives, hey, can you make this one more change? It's going to take you that time to make that change and do all of that. And so if it's not in your agreement and you don't have this invoice on there, then you might have to do it. And feel
really,
and waste all that time doing it. And so if you have this invoice, you can say, hey, great suggestion, I can definitely do that, the charge will be this much. You're being very open with them and honest with them, but you have this kind of, you know, one page contract, if you will, that stipulates what is included in this job.
Yeah, just treat them like a contract that gets you paid. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Easy enough. Money always sounds like a good motivator to do something.
I thought you were going to do a Wu-Tang reference there for a second. Well, you know, my financial planner, the RZA.
Is the old dirty bastard involved in that?
Once told me cash rules everything around me.
Couldn't get the money.
Dollar, 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 dollar. Okay. Oh, here's another one. All right, here's one I actually don't know shit about, which is kind of bad because I was a freelancer. 401ks for freelancers.
Is that a thing? Does it exist?
Well, it's a bit of a tough thing. It's more 401ks really essentially is that savings plan that, you know, it's more so for an employee-employer relationship, but it's kind of like a savings plan where, you know, you put in a certain amount and your employer matches that. It's almost like a pension, an employee pension plan for when you retire. So as a freelancer, there isn't really as much out there. However, there is some really great work being done from the Freelancers Union that actually has created a Freelancers Union retirement plan for these people, which is amazing. So, and there's no, from what we know right now, there's no minimum amount. You can contribute as much as you can, and you don't have to continue to do it. So if you have a dryer sprout, you don't have to contribute. So there are some great mechanisms, things out there to help you invest in the future through the Freelancers Union.
Nice.
All right, so what's an example of a really bad invoice that you guys have seen?
Oh.
There's many. I guess to start off, a lot of creatives fall in this trap where they would create this beautiful looking invoice that doesn't get them paid, you know? So it's on brand. It's got the right color. It's got the kerning. It's got all this. But when it comes down to it, the accounting team gets it. It's a 4-meg file. They can't open it. They don't know how this PDF thing will print.
It's an InDesign.
It's an InDesign. And like, what is InDesign? What is this?
These fonts won't load.
Yeah, it won't load. What's going on? You know, and then they're asking, when did you send it? Of course, then the creative has to go to their sent file and search for invoice. And there's like 6,000 invoices or emails in there to go through. And it's a big disaster. So a bad invoice might look good, but it's more important at the end of the day that you get paid for your work.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say, did you see that invoice? Yeah. Man, that was a nice
it's
invoice.
It's a book piece.
Janice, get over here. Look at this beautiful invoice. My God, the kerning on this thing.
And submit this thing to archive. It's going to win a lion, this invoice.
This is going to win the Invoicey Awards, for sure. Clean up.
Well, I'm glad I took a drink right when you were saying that.
Another question I had was, when it comes to expenses, what are the sorts of things that you know, can itemize as expenses? So we talked about, like, we mentioned cabs and Ubers and the house and all these sorts of things. Like, what are the kind of specifics that you can kind of count as an expense that you've gone through?
So much.
There's so much. I think at a high level, whatever expenses that you can attribute to your business. So what's reasonable? So if you're having meals with your client, you can expense that. If you're cabbing, as I mentioned, to your client's office, you can likely expense that. If you're working at home and part of that is, you know, your quote home office, you can expense a portion of your at home as a home office. You know, even your car mileage. Be careful because a lot of people tend to overdo that and put too much expenses on their mileage. So you have to be careful with how much you do, but really anything related to your business, you can write off some of that.
Actually, what about if you freelance out of town? I freelanced in LA once upon a time. So if you're not, you know, you're having to pay for flights, you're having to pay for rental cars and all of that, is that stuff you can expense?
Well, yeah. If you're there for a client, that's defendable, right? So you could say, I was here at a client in LA, I was staying there for that reason. Yes. So again, working with an accountant, you can probably see how much you want to expense, but I would say for sure, a lot of it you'd be able to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, heck, that's the beauty of freelance, right? Yeah. We can write off so much. We may not be able to rely on 401ks and all that other stuff, but what we can rely on is being able to write off just about everything, because there is no 9-to-5 for us. Our job keeps on going. So why shouldn't you be able to write off stuff that you wouldn't be doing if it wasn't for this particular project?
Right. And I'll see you in jail.
All right, so we've heard this term from you guys before we got on the air about value-based billing, and you were telling us a little bit about that. But can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. It's really just to kind of preface that this is not for the junior level freelancer who's just starting out and figuring out their way of how to bill. It's more so for the established creative that want to get out of that trap of trading hours for dollars. And really what it is, it's more of a paradigm shift. So it's flipping the conversation toward the value you deliver versus the cost that you're incurring. So working with your client on what kind of return on the investment or ROI you're going to give. So for example, if you're a web designer, UX designer, and you're developing a website for a client and working with them, they're able to generate $100,000 more in revenue. So then you can look at that rate and say, okay, so based on the amount of additional revenue, you can then work on, let's say, a $10,000 rate. So then that's a huge 10x sort of return on investment based on that. What's really great about this shift with the right client is that they're now not stressing about reducing your costs, but more stressing about the profit and value that we're going to be delivering. So they're not thinking about that anymore.
They're thinking about the quality, the creative.
The quality, exactly. And they're not looking at how many hours have you spent? What's the rate so far? No, we're having to get you $100,000 more in revenue, and you're more a business partner with them and less about just a transaction.
So that's cool. Yeah, it positions you as a professional, right? Like this is your realm. This is your wheelhouse. So to come to the table saying, this is my deal, and I'm going to tell you where you're at and where you could be, positions you as a partner, like Rob was saying, as opposed to this horrible race to the bottom that everybody's doing that's like, oh, I can do this faster and cheaper. Who would want to do that? I don't want to hire someone who's faster and cheaper. I want someone who's going to bring quality to the table because I care about my business. And that's what I dig about value-based billing, is that it positions you as the authority that you are.
Yeah, that's interesting to actually – you know, realize that the things that I'm giving you are going to increase your value this much. You know, it puts you on a much better footing. It's interesting.
It's a huge amount of footing. It's getting out of that transaction of, okay, I deliver the logo, I'm done. Now they have a responsibility to work with you of how are things going? How can we make it better? And then now you might get more jobs as you go through because you're trying to see. Because how many designers know how much revenue that this company made after they deliver the website? A lot of them don't. And they may have made $100,000 and you had no idea. You're charging, I don't know, $100 a day when they're getting $100,000 or $200,000 more in revenue. So you got to think of it that way. And that's how you're really undervaluing yourself, because all they're thinking about is your hourly rate and not thinking that you're part of them generating 10 times the amount of value.
Are there forms of payment that kind of do play off of that, where it is more of a kind of a step based, and when you hit certain milestones after the work comes out, is there a version of freelance or invoicing that will work in that way? Like if you know, if we design this and then you move this many units or you get this many clicks on your website, then I would get a bonus at almost, this much.
It's almost like incentive based,
right?
To like how they do like sports contracts,
right?
Definitely. Again, working with your client, so revenue share, if you will, in terms of incentives, yes. And that's part of that next level, you know, partner, designer, creative that works with them. So now if you as a creative are in it with them.
Cool.
And I think the thing that kind of, I don't know. It warms the cockles of my heart because I like all things that remind me how human
cockles
we are.
Cockles is such a great word.
Great word.
Just eat enough in a day, right?
But I'd like to microwave a cockle.
The thing that I like remembering is that we're all human and we all get scared and we're all thinking the same things in terms of, as a creative, I'm afraid that someone's going to reject my work. They're going to reject me as a person that they can go to get rock solid work for a decent price. You know, I have my fears as a creative for sure, but the client has their own fears that they're bringing to the table. Things like, you know, will this go well? Is this a horrible investment? I don't know what I'm doing. This creativity thing is such a mystery. I mean, they're bringing their own bag of insecurities.
Why
to
is that
table.
Guy wearing velvet?
Why is this guy head to toe in velvet?
Because this shit's
so
fresh. That's why.
I trust it. Yeah. So that's the thing that I like remembering. We're all human. We all bring our insecurities to the table. So just embrace that your client is as scared as you are. So just level it out and say, this is the value I'm going to bring to you. It feels scary because we don't know what's on the other side. But together, we're going to knock it out of the park.
It reminds me of a story I heard a long time ago. It's totally somewhat related. There was like
there
a,
we th- were.
There was the year was 1986. There was a creative director I heard of who would like go to meetings and he would have a knife in his pocket.
Are you serious?
Go on.
And
go on.
Just no one in the meeting knew that he had a knife in his pocket. He just did that so that he essentially had a secret that he made him feel more powerful than the room.
Nice. It's not nuts. I mean, I don't recommend consuming.
Well,
it could have been a lot of. It could have been a ball. It didn't have to be a knife.
It's not nuts. It's not nuts, but it's also not nuts. So maybe we end on this one. We actually heard that you guys have a bit of an interesting practice when a new employee joins your company. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, you know, FreshBooks, we're pretty crazy about customer service. In fact, we're all about being in your corner. And so everybody who starts at FreshBooks has to work 1 month in support, whether you're a designer, you're a VP, or you're a developer. So it's really there to kind of first learn about our culture because we're a bunch of crazy people. We'll learn about our product. And mostly to learn about our customer from their ear. So you're taking calls, you're answering emails, you're really learning about what freelancers and small business owners are feeling with their product. So when you go into your actual job, you have the empathy for them when designing or developing or whatever your role might be.
That's great. Now, it sounds like incredibly useful because you guys know, you know, the way you guys have talked about kind of our side, it's that kind of understanding of what the customer has, which in this case is us. Is very unique and very helpful. I can imagine that it's very helpful for you guys to be able to develop the tools you have for freelancers and for small businesses to succeed.
It's really huge. You know, creatives is actually our biggest or one of our biggest segments in terms of types of people who use our product. And so that's why we want to learn from them. You know, it's built for you. So we should really hear what's going on, what are the problems, right? And how do we make it better for you? So that's what we're all about, you know, really building that empathy for the customer, i.e. creatives that are using us who don't know literally shit about accounting. So how
well,
to
hopefully
make
not literally shit.
So, you know, how do they know what to do? So we want to make it so simple that they can run their business and not having to learn accounting. That's really what we're trying to do.
All right. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for this episode. Guys, one last time, if people want to know more about your website and your business, where do they go?
Just go to freshbooks.com/working not working.
And is there some sort of a deal or a something maybe?
Ooh, yeah. Oh, the first 30 days are completely unlimited. So, I mean, like every single feature that is in FreshBooks, you get totally free, totally unlimited for a whole month. Oh
my God.
You get to save all that sweet freelance money.
Oh, sweet velvet money.
More velvet.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. And this has been Ask an Expert. And hopefully we'll see you guys again next time.
All righty.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.